Good morning and welcome to the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. Scott?
Yes?
I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant. I'm no longer flying solo.
I heard that on the car last week.
Yeah. Oh, you did? So you were listening?
I did for 30 minutes, and then my wife said that she was done.
So she only listened for 30 minutes?
30 minutes.
Wow. I guess you take care of the lawn, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why are you saying it so quietly? Is she listening this morning?
Good, no, because really I haven't taken care of the lawn this year.
Yeah, neither have I. So, folks, you are tuned into the Yard Pro Show brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. It's an absolute delight to be here on the eve of St. Patrick's Day. A little bit nippy outside, I would say, this morning.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little deceiving, Scott.
Why?
You look outside, you're all excited, it's nice and sunny, and wow, it's going to be a beautiful day.
And then you step out, open the door.
You open the door, you get halfway to your truck, your vehicle, your car, and or to the newspaper in the front, and all of a sudden a gust of wind hits you, and you're like, oh my goodness, winter is hanging on, would you not say?
I would say.
Tell you what, you get some nice mild weather, get some beautiful days, a little bit of rain yesterday. You know, but nonetheless, mild temperature-wise, mm-hmm. Kind of a nice temperature day the last few days. Of course, I was in Louisiana first half of the week where it was 77 and foggy. It's a little odd. You'd have thought somebody had just dropped me right in the middle of Seattle or something. But it was warm. It was foggy, but it was warm. You get home, it's kind of nice and warm and pleasant. Beautiful drive home from the airport Wednesday. Wow, this is going to be a great week. Good weekend. Can't wait to get outside.
And then bam.
Bam. Get up this morning, walk outside, wind knocks you over. And not only you, you know, got a little bit of sidewalk rash on your knees from being knocked over from the wind, it's a little chilly to boot. So, you know, hey, I guess most folks this morning perhaps are having that cup of coffee indoors, escaping the wind. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Scott. It's been a busy week, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
Very busy week. Mostly dry during the week. Weather, like I said, is fairly mild. The interesting thing, you know, we're at that time of season. We're in the spring of the year where it's all about soil temperatures, things of that nature. You know, what are we doing in the lawn, the landscape? What needs to take place? You know, one of the big things we've been pushing is the pre-emergent herbicide for the prevention of summer weeds, mm-hmm. Crabgrass, and all that good stuff. And, you know, all of that's based on temperature, specifically on soil temperature. We take something like crabgrass, and crabgrass, Scott, you know, you look online, you do a little research from some old university studies, you know, 55 degrees and above for 4 to 5 days, soil temperature, and you see crabgrass germination. That's correct. But I really feel like it's maybe even a little bit closer to 60. You know, it seems like 60 is that magical number in soil temps. 60 is that temperature where things, you know, our lawns begin to green up and grow and crabgrass is germinating prolifically. 60 is also that temperature in the fall of the year that once we get to it, poannua begins to germinate, things of that nature. So that's kind of like the magical temperature. Wouldn't you say? You over there grinning, laughing.
No, you're saying crabgrass 60 degrees. I'm like, man, crabgrass and I have a lot in common.
Oh, yeah, because you don't really
want to do function until 60.
Yeah, you don't function until it's 60 degrees. I mean, hey. But the interesting thing is, Scott, this week, pulling the soil temperature report and looking, and one of the things we really need to look at is kind of, yeah, our current temperatures are interesting. Our 24-hour average kind of tells us where we're headed, but really it's that five-day average, those previous five-day averages. You know, where are we, what's been going on for this five-day average, and that's an average of all during the day, not just the high or the low of the soil temperature. When we talk soil temperatures, we're talking about daily averages because soil temperature will fluctuate during the day, especially this time of the year. So the interesting thing is that right now in the upstate of South Carolina, we're at 53.8 degrees five-day average. So we're right at that threshold of crabgrass still underneath it. In the Midlands, Columbia area, we're at 61.2. So we're at that magical or above that magical 60 degrees. The interesting thing, my, how things can change. Last week, the five-day average in the upstate was 49.2 degrees, and in the Midlands was 52.8. So we've seen nearly a 10-degree increase in the Midlands and about a 4-degree increase in the upstate. that's a little more typical of what we would see this time of the year. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens the next few days. You know, we had rain yesterday. A lot of our listeners did. And rain, I've always said, cools it back down. Why do we bring this up? Why is it important? Well, it's important for the fact that we really need to see the pre-emergent go out. If you haven't done your pre-emergent yet, if you haven't put the predominant, the barricade, the things of that nature out there, you need to get that out quickly. I mean, it is that time, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
So what else is going on, Scott? What's kind of a hot topic? POA, we're getting a lot of calls about POA.
POA.
You know, I'm sure we may get a call or two or a text or two today about POA. Speaking of calls and text, please give us a call this morning, 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And you can make yourself a participant. And as always, you can text us at 71307. That's 71307. We would love to hear from you. So, Scott, with that, Chuck from Bowling Springs found us this morning. You know, Chuck's a longtime listener.
He is.
So he didn't have to have that phone number. But the phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. Maybe some new callers today. Wouldn't that be great? Chuck, good morning and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Great. It's been a long time since we talked, has it not?
Yeah, well, we talked a couple of weeks ago, and if you remember, I had a big elm tree that was killing my garden and the grass, and you said either move the garden or take the tree out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, I took the tree out, and now I've got a big mud hole out there, basically, and I was trying to figure out what the best way to repopulate that, I guess. I got two sons. One says plant a flower garden. The other one says plant grass.
Yeah, well, you know, we helped you. We got you to this point, Chuck. This is the point for us to exit and say good luck. Enjoy your mud hole. Maybe you could buy a few pigs, put a little corral around it. Bacon eats really good. I mean, you know.
And you've got a Bermuda lawn, right?
Right.
So I would almost say, how close is that where you chew the tree up close to your garden?
I don't know, maybe 15, 20 feet away, something like that.
I would almost say go with the son that said plant a flower garden.
You would.
Because just for the simple fact is, I don't know, you got Bermuda, you've been put more closer to it than you've got that infiltrating inside into your garden. Be a lot of weeding.
Mm. Okay, yeah, we're getting ready to level it. I had the stump ground out, but it's kind of like a mound out there now. So we got a guy with a tiller coming by this afternoon and going to level it out and then go from there.
Okay. Is it a raised garden or is it ground level?
Yeah, it's raised about 8-10 inches, I guess.
Okay. Timbers yeah, if it's a raised it. Garden, yeah. If you've got a barrier down there where nothing, you know, no grass can grow in there, then you go back with more Bermuda then.
Okay. Well, basically that red clay dirt. Would you recommend putting some topsoil on there or reseeding or just let it grow over on its own?
I mean, if you're going to, I mean, is this for grass or for a garden?
Well, I'm thinking grass right now.
If you're thinking grass, Chuck, I would almost go with the native soil that's there. And the reason being, I feel like, you know, it's just like a golf superintendent. If they do some work on a golf green or really anywhere in their fairways, especially with Bermuda, if you have a totally different soil profile in one area of your lawn or of your grass golf green compared to other areas, you're going to see that grass grow and react differently from environmental issues. Maybe it's water during a drought time of the year, even during winter times of year. So I kind of urge people, you know, if your lawn is all native soil mix, then and you have some damage like you have or you're repairing an area, I really feel like you're best just staying with the native soil. That way the entire lawn is of the same profile.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, well, get it going here. It's time to get all this stuff going. I got one last quick question for you. My neighborhood, about 450 houses in here, is being taken over by hairy bittercress. And I noticed the lawns, like, for instance, the house next door to me, people have moved down. It's for sale. And so they haven't been doing anything to it for a little while. And it's just covered in that stuff. I don't have a lot of it. I got it kind of on the edges. And I go around the neighborhood. Usually the people that don't do a lot of fertilizing and stuff like that, they're just, that stuff is coming up all over the place. And I'm wondering what's the best thing to do to get rid of that.
You know, the hairy bittercress is much like the Poa annual bluegrass. Once the daily temperatures start creeping up towards 80 or get into the 80s sustained, we'll see the hairy bittercress kind of go by the wayside because it is a winter annual, okay? So pre-emergent, much like we use pre-emergent for our Poa annua in the fall of the year, pre-emergent is a great control for hairy bittercress. However, prodiamine, which seems to be one of the major players in the pre-emergent market in residential turf, does not control hairy bittercress. Now, we're well aware of this. We push a lot of prodiamine because it's a product that seems to be a little bit more foolproof. It lasts longer in the landscape. But if you do know that you have a population of hairy bittercress, and one thing you may want to share with the 400-plus homeowners in your neighborhood, which would be great from us, is that we sell Dimension in the fall of the year, and they need to switch their pre-emergent to Dimension. They'll get much better control on the hairy bittercress. Now, the sacrifice is it may not have as an extended control on the POA, the Dimension I'm speaking of, may not give quite the extended control on the POA that they're accustomed to out of the hairy bittercress, out of the prodiamine on that POA. You know, but this late in the season, I think you got two options. You know, do you spray it? What do you do? I will say this, a bonus, a lot of times like on POA, I'll say, hey, it's getting late in the season. I don't know if I'd waste my time in a residential setting spraying the POA. The one reason I may pull out the guns and say, hey, let's go spray this hairy bittercress, any broadleaf weed killer labeled for your lawn, safe for your lawn but kills broadleaf weeds, should control it. The only reason I would suggest you may want to control it, once that hairy bittercress goes to seed, it's got that little seed pod, Chuck, and when it begins to dry out and you touch it, it explodes, and it throws hundreds of seeds. That one seed pod will have hundreds of seeds which are dispersed throughout the lawn. They're going to lie dormant through the summer period, and if you don't pre-emerge, they're going to germinate again this fall. So that may be why you want to pull the stops out, do a little bit of spraying. But if you're going to spray it, they need to spray it. You know, I'd say spray it here the first week. It's going to be cooler. You know, we hadn't had time to talk about our projected forecast. It is going to be a little frosty in the upstate, it looks like. If the wind lies down, if it's this windy, we certainly won't see frost. But Monday, Tuesday, even maybe Wednesday morning may see some frost. So I would get the spray out sometime in that period because it looks behind it. We're going to be in the mid-60s. You know, in the upper 40s at night, so we're going to get back into a better growing situation for these weeds. And we need that post-emergent chemical needs an actively growing weed for it to be active or for it to be effective.
Okay. Yeah, I think I put down, I can't remember if it was prodiamine or the Dimension last fall, because I don't have a lot of this stuff in the main portion of the lawn. It's just kind of coming around the edges. Where, like some of these lawns, it's all over, but mine are kind of in the edges. So I think I must have done some good with the pre-emergent last fall. And I've also done it again this spring, last week, I guess it was.
And I'll say this, and I've said it many times throughout the winter months, you know, the amount of rainfall that we've had this winter, we're seeing an awful lot of weed breakthrough. Even if you had pre-emergent lawn, whether it be Dimension, prodiamine, we're just seeing heavier weed pressure right now. My front lawn, I've never really seen hairy bittercress in it, and I've probably got, you know, 20, 30, 40 plants of hairy bittercress in my front lawn this year. So I think, too, it's cyclic with the amount of rainfall that we had. You know, we don't get this typically in most years. So that should take care of it.
Yeah, I think my patio turned green. It's rained so much.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds good. Thanks for the help, guys, and I'll get off and let somebody else.
Okay. Sounds great.
Have a good weekend, Chuck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You do, too.
Bye-bye. So, Scott, you know, good conversation there. A lot of things going on. What do we do, you know, repairing the lawn, you know, this time of the year, Bermuda? You can lace Bermuda sod right now. Certainly acceptable. Great time to do it. Probably not the best. I mean, if you ask me what's the best, I'm always going to tell you it's the best when things are actively growing. Because the name of the game is to make it root as quickly as possible. Can it be done? Yes. Are you going to have issues? probably not this late into the winter, approaching early spring. So probably past. But I say that it's supposed to be 32 first of the week, one morning in the upstate. Do you still do soil samples at your Dunkin' store? Cost, turnaround time. Yes, we do soil samples at all of our retail stores, and they are extremely expensive at the cost of free. So it will cost you a little bit of time to pull the soil sample. It will cost you a little bit of gas money to get there to the store. So the only cost involved, I say free, is your time. So take the time.
And that turnaround time's about 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks. Begin to get, you know, as we get closer to spring, we begin to get a little busier with those. But we have the bags there. If you don't want to go, you know, pull the bags from the store, then go back home, collect the sample, then back to the store, we certainly understand it. But take your soil samples, put them in a Ziploc bag or a little small, you know, lunch bag, sandwich bag. Bring us about 1 cup of soil per sample that you need to test. You know, if your front yard is a different environment than your backyard, like most people, we need to take a sample from your front lawn. We need to take a sample from the back lawn. You may have a vegetable garden. You may have a perennial bed. We don't limit you as to how many soil samples we will process for you in a year. So take advantage of it. Certainly get out to the stores. I feel like it's one of the best public services that we offer out there. But it is about a 2-week turnaround. As we get closer or deeper into spring, you may see it be a 3-week turnaround, but we'd love to have you do that. And if you'd like to find a location as to where you can take your soil and drop it off, it's very simple. If you can visit www.carolinafreshfarms.com during the week, there you will find a link to all of our retail stores throughout the great state of South Carolina, including our 7th store, which is now open in the Somerville location. So Scott, we're going to stay with the phone lines. We have Dean in Greenville. Now, Dean may be talking a little bit more my speed. I was daydreaming about this yesterday evening. I believe it's a question about tomatoes. So it's almost time to plant that garden. You know that, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
It's getting close. Hello, Dean, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much. I planted some tomatoes around in the yard summer before last. I didn't try them last year, but I had a problem with blossom end rot, and I was wanting to know, what do I need to do to take care of that? We need some great tomatoes this summer.
Calcium, calcium, calcium. Lime, lime, lime.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Scott hit the nail on the head. A lot of calcium, a little bit of nitrogen. I mean, a well-balanced soil. You know, I think you probably just heard our little spill about free soil samples, Dean. If you haven't taken a soil sample in the last year or two, let's take a soil sample and take it specifically from these areas that you want to plant tomatoes. You know, it doesn't – if you got them scattered, it sounds like, are you planting these where you have a little void in your shrub bed and maybe, you know, have a little room between shrubs over here, I can plant one or two tomatoes. You move 20 feet to the right, there's another little place. I mean, is that what you're doing? Or?
Well, I had an area next to a storage building that I planted several. And then there was an area where there used to be a little flower bed. And I planted where that flower bed had been in the past.
Okay. So you got a couple different areas. And you may be able to take a sample from those areas, you know, mix it together, bring it to us, if the environment of those two areas are pretty similar to each other. You know, where I'm talking about we need to pull different soil samples is perhaps the backyard is full-on sun, you know, south-facing, and maybe the front yard is north-facing and is mostly shade with a lot of trees around. When, you know, those major differences in those little micro climates or micro environments you have within your landscape, you can see the soil differ. But if the two areas you're planting your tomatoes are both in the backyard, they get the same sun exposure, the whole nine yards, they're probably, the soil profile should be pretty much identical to each one of the others. So in that situation, one soil sample, you know, pull it from both of the areas, blend it together, bring us a cup of that blended soil and let us test it. Make sure it's nice and well balanced, pH is in good shape. But a really good balanced slow-release fertilizer at time of planting, maybe a little bit of, you know, I use, it doesn't have to be the brand name Miracle-Gro, but Miracle-Gro, because everybody, you know, understands that, or Peters. Scott, you've got some Peters for sale down there at the store, right? Or it's all gone? So, but if you could take that, you know, advice for the calcium that Scott gave you, you're going to have really good bloom set, and it's going to help you stay away from calcium end rot or the blossom end rot, which is a lack of calcium.
Right. All right. I appreciate that, and I will be pulling the soil sample this week and bring it over.
Sounds great. You have a wonderful weekend, and we wish you a lot of success on the tomato growing. So.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we appreciate it.
I look forward to it.
Thank you, Dean.
All right.
Bye bye. Yeah, Scott. That is kind of ironic. Dean calls in because
I would like if gardens this year. If you could email us photos of your garden success or anything.
Oh, we'd love to have it.
Yeah.
You know, success or, well, as always, too, you can email us failures because we can help you figure out what the problem is. But it would be nice, especially if you'd like to email those, we can share them on our Facebook page, Instagram, things of that nature, and share your successes out there with the other followers of what's going on within your garden. It'd be nice to see some pictures from our buddy Jim over in Easley that has the big garden.
And your address.
Yeah. And if you get a bumper crop, you don't know what to do with it, bring it to the retail store closest to you. I'm sure we have employees and staff members who would love to have a little bit of and reap the benefit of the bounty of your garden, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing like fresh vegetables and tomatoes. Mm-hmm. I mean, just fantastic. Scott, we're reaching that bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we have a text we need to get to concerning weeds and health concerns within the landscape and garden, which will be a fantastic discussion. As always, the phone lines are open. We would love to hear from you at 1-800-347-1063. That's 800-347-1063. And you can text us at 71307. You're tuned into the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. You can find us during the week. It's very simple at carolinafreshfarms.com. There you will find a link to all of our retail locations, some great information about how to maintain your landscape, as well as some links to a little thing that we're pushing pretty hard this time of the year and we'll continue to push throughout the year, which is hardscapes. So now's a great time to make plans. Stay tuned to the second half of the show. We'll talk to you in just a few. Welcome back to the Yard Pro Show, brought to you by Carolina Fresh Farms. I'm one of your hosts today, Mills Grant.
And I'm Scott Beard.
And Scott, it's a delight to be back.
It is.
I'm glad to have you back. I say be back. I've been here. You're the one that disappeared last week. How was your trip, by the way?
It was nice.
Was it?
A lot of work.
Yeah? Good times?
It was good times.
Oh, awesome. So glad
wish
to
have wish I'd have had my fishing rod, but for some reason I haven't found it in 10 years.
You know, I'm sorry about that. I've got a nice Okuma saltwater reel and rod outfit if you'd like to borrow it at some point when you're going out.
And then
out.
It's ironic, you went red fishing in Louisiana.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I didn't use it. You could have used the Okuma, though. I didn't use it.
That's nice of you. Thank you.
But if you ever want to borrow it, just let me know.
Okay. I'm going back in May.
Okay, perfect. Well, if you would like to use it, you might. Folks, you are tuned in. Sorry you have to listen to the banter between Scott and I, but you know what? We like to have a little bit of fun. We hope you're having fun today. If you're sitting out on the back patio and you're facing towards the north, probably not so much fun as that wind is whipping at this point and a little bit blustery, a little bit chilly. But, you know, other than that, it's nice and sunny. It's drying out. It will help dry it out with the wind blowing, Scott. So it could be maybe this afternoon would be a good time to get out, do a little more work in the lawn. Scott, I think we need to get to the text lines here because they are filling up. And then here in just a second, we've got Mary, who hopefully can be patient and wait about another minute or so. So here's a text came in the first half. Hi, I have dogs, so I don't want to use Roundup, which may cause cancer. What other weed prevention options do I have? Thanks. It depends. I mean, that's kind of tough from that text to, you know, from a weed prevention standpoint, Roundup is a post-emergent weed killer. So from a prevention standpoint, to me, that's kind of off the table, out of discussion anyway, you know, there. You know, the fact that it may cause cancer, I do appreciate the way they said may. I don't even know if that's really as much a concern once it's applied to the lawn at this point. If you look to our EPA, the FDA, the U.S. officials have, you know, they came out several years ago and said, no, it's not carcinogenic. You know, that was back in 14 and 15. There was a big push in the European science world, that and they never said it was. They said probable carcinogenic. So, you know, what are your alternatives from a post-emergent standpoint that's non-selective? It's really difficult, to be honest with you. That's why this topic has been on such a hotbed in the ag industry, is because of just not many options out there. The options that are out there are much worse compounds than the compounds that we're discussing, okay? So we're going back, throwing back to some old things like diquat, things of that nature. That would be an option for non-selective total vegetation control. So there are just not many good, safe alternatives out there. The home remedies maybe you can mix up salt, vinegar, things of that nature.
Oils.
You know, you could try that. But from a preventative standpoint, anything you put out in the lawn, whether it's a pre-emergent, whether it's a post-emergent spray, the rule of thumb with that, because I have a dog, I have a couple of cats, the rule of thumb of that in our household is, one, number one, follow the label. The label gives you the guideline, tells you what you can and can't do. Even on simple products such as Roundup, it tells you on there that you must wear the proper protective equipment protocol. You have to follow that, which is long pants, long sleeves,
gloves,
face
goggles,
shield when mixing, gloves. You don't want to physically touch it. Well, take the same idea that when you apply that somewhere in the lawn, you don't want to let your pets re-enter that area until it is completely dried. If you do that, you follow the label, trust me, you will be safe. That's the key. You know, most of the products that are taken out of our hands typically are because of
human error, misuse.
Yes, because some products, you know, fipronil, case in point, the old over and out fire ant control that Bayer produced, great product. It's still used and can be used in your lawn, but it has to be applied by a licensed. Away from the use of or retail sales and home lawns or the average individual citizen being able to purchase it, is because it's highly toxic to fish. And people were using it in an inappropriate manner. They weren't paying attention. They would take it and blow it off the curb right down the stormwater drain. It'd wind up in the local creek, then in the pond behind your house. Next thing you know, you got a fish killed. So keep in mind, read the label, follow the label. That is the law. And if you do that and you wear the proper equipment, you will be safe. You will be protected. No doubt in my mind. So a lot of research goes into pesticides before they're released into the market. Let's go to Mary. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Good morning, Mary, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Hi. Nice to be with you.
Nice to have you on the air.
Thank you. I have a question regarding taking out an old natural area, which life has taught me is more maintenance than grass could ever be, with weeds, and even you put the ground cover down and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't make any difference. You still get them. And so I'm taking one out. It's pretty large. The backyard has a lot of pine trees. And I want to go back in with grass. I have centipede already, but it tends to struggle in the environment that I have in the back. What's the best thing to do as far as going back in with grass?
And you're in the Columbia market, correct, Mary?
Yes, that's right.
You said you had a lot of pine trees, and my thoughts are, when we see a lot of pine trees over a period of time, the majority of the canopy is up high in the pine tree. So we see a lot of the trunk of the tree, 30, 40,
right,
50 foot in the air, then we see the tops. I hope that's what we're beginning to see, and you have some more mature, taller pine trees.
Yeah, they've been here a long time.
So if we get a little bit of filtered light, okay?
We do.
And if we're in a pretty well-drained soil situation, I feel like something like Palisades or Chisholm Zoysia, those zoysias seem to do a little bit better in that situation than even centipede. Yeah, centipede will tolerate just a smidgen of shade, but it will begin to thin out a little bit quicker than something like a zoysia. So if you can get just enough sunlight, you may be fairly successful with something like Palisade zoysia, which is going to be a lot easier for you to maintain. It is a little bit more costly on the establishment side, from a sod standpoint, because it takes us a little longer to grow it in at the field. And then there's, you know, there are other issues with that as far as production that kind of drive the cost up on our end, our cost. Therefore, just like anything else in business, we have to pass the cost through. But the Zoysia long term sounds to me like it might be a pretty fantastic lawn in that situation.
Now, eventually it would grow and expand and take over the centipede, yes?
Yeah, and it, and if not, they, those two grasses can cohabitate a little bit. You'll see a color difference during the growing season. Centipede, you know, has that little lime green color, but if you're worried about where you have a well-established centipede area versus a little bit deeper back into this wooded area, I think give it a few years, let the two kind of blend that edge and cohabitate with each other. And, yeah, you may see a little difference in color in the peak of the summer. But I think over time what you'll see is the Zoysia is just a hardier grass, and you may see it begin to take over and grow further out into that centipede lawn area. So
okay, great.
But the textures are very similar. The color's a little bit, you know, you're a little bit lighter shade of green on the centipede versus the Palisades. But in the dormant winter months, they're going to look pretty close to each other. I just think it's a good option. I think it's time because those trees are going to continue to grow. And depending on what side of the lawn they sit on, you may find that the centipede is, you're going to lose more and more centipede lawn every year as these trees mature. So it may be time to start thinking about converting grass.
Okay, great. And taking out pine trees.
Yeah, and taking out pine trees. I would thin them out. I wouldn't get rid of all of them. Trees are a great thing. If you can, you know, tolerate it in the landscape, if you're successful growing some grass or ground cover underneath them, keep your trees if you want. Trees are a good thing.
I like trees, but I could do without all these pines.
Especially right now, because I bet the car windshield is yellow within 10 minutes, right?
Yes, and we're raining pine cones.
Exactly. So, well, good luck to you.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Scott, you know, great question there as well and topic.
And you are right about the pine trees. You went back to my hometown 2 weeks ago, and I went home last week, and you said the pollen was horrible. My wife's Volkswagen is a black car, and within one day,
it was yellow.
It was yellow.
Yeah, yeah, the pine trees. And we're beginning to see that, you know, throughout the entire state now, as well as, you know, it was funny. Yesterday, Heidi and I were together yesterday evening in the car, and she made the comment of, oh, what's that pretty pinkish, purplish flower over there? And, you know, immediately I just spurt out, Cercis canadensis. I've got four. How many do you have? You know, I like to play that little road game. Who can spot the Cercis canadensis, the red bud, eastern red bud flowering? So, you know, the red buds kind of survived. We hadn't talked much about that deep freeze we had week before last. I mean, deep, deep freeze.
We haven't, because you and I were in North Carolina. We were headed back,
yep.
And we drove through Fingerville, which is, I guess, the capital of the upstate for peaches.
Yes.
And they were throwing covers as fast as they could.
Yeah, on the strawberries, double covering strawberries, trying to figure out how to get the peach crop to survive. I'm not sure what happened on the ridge. I don't know if you're real familiar with the ridge is. The ridge. Midland, South Carolina, man. That's where the peach production takes place.
Oh, Edgefield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that county
as
and that area.
As far as you
area.
Can see.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how they fared. I was actually down there a few days. Had an event a couple days after the freeze, and they were waiting because a lot of this, and we mentioned on the radio show, Scott, when we have a deep freeze, we may not see the result of that deep freeze for several days. So I'm not sure how they fared traveling this week out of state. Just didn't really keep up with the local news much, but hopefully they fared well because I do love a South Carolina peach. There's just something about a good homegrown South Carolina peach. You know, this absolutely perfect. My vegetable garden had a terrible problem with fungus during the summer of 2017. Last year, I covered the garden with black poly and let the soil bake. I want to uncover and prep for vegetables this year. Do you have suggestions on how I should prep and avoid a repeat of the dreaded fungus explosion? It really depends on what the fungus is, and is it a fungus or it is a bacterial virus? Is it a wilt or something? Because if you're growing tomatoes and you continue to grow them in the same spot, you're going to find that there's some bacteria and viruses out there that can infect your crop over a period of time, and the best way is to rotate, move those to somewhere else. But one of the things I like that this texter or customer did, in essence, they're enclaving, so they're heating up the soil to kill anything that's in the soil. Mm-hmm. Black plastic heat of our summer, you leave it there all summer, who knows how hot it gets. It gets hot. It should help sterilize the soil. So,
and that was a 2017 garden, so last year he left it on there.
He left it on there. Yep. So may see some good results out of that. As far as other things to do out there, it's just difficult to say other than a positive ID on the fungus that you're causing. Now, one thing people don't understand, there's some good fungicides out there that are labeled for edible crops, have mm-hmm. been used for many, many years. So you may want to do a little spray program. If you go to the grocery store and you buy a product, if it's organic, it doesn't have these fungicides on it. But everything else you buy in the grocery store, more than likely, has been treated with a fungicide.
Yep.
Sorry, but it has. Let's talk about reality.
And then what you could do, put your plastic back down, cut a hole, plant your plants there. That way you don't get a splash up.
For some of your things like mm-hmm. fusarium wilt, you're splashing up from the soil onto those lower leaves, and then it affects, inoculates the plant, continues to grow up. And you're right. Some type of ground cover underneath the plant could help as well.
And then pinch also the bottoms.
Pinch the bottom leaves off. If they start looking a little weird, a little spotting there, go ahead and get them out. Remove them completely from the garden would be my thought. So great text question. And a lot of people want a vegetable garden. You know, it's time for me to get out there. It's about time to take a soil sample and turn that garden under. If you haven't turned it under yet, if it dries out enough in the next week to 10 days, be a good time. I'll probably do the same. Get that garden turned under, start working that soil, get it ready. Hey, yard pros, when is the best time to transplant all these March flowers in my yard? A lot of these March flowers, they're in the peak of bloom, so we're probably talking bulbs, Lenten roses, things of that nature. Just after they bloom would be my suggestion is when you mm-hmm. want to transplant them. Wouldn't you, Scott?
Yep.
So, ooh,
Lenten rose, I love it.
Oh, I tell you, Lenten yes. roses this year have been just phenomenal. You know, I was downtown day before yesterday looking at some lawn issues downtown Greenville. Gosh, it's the Garden Clubs of Greenville own a nice old historic home. It's an old city park behind City Cemetery. And the Lenten Rose there, Kilgore Lewis house.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. If you like Lenten Rose.
I thought that's where you were going.
Take a little trek through the Kilgore Lewis property there because the Lenten Rose are just fantastic in full bloom right now. Do you carry Trimec in the Dunkin' store? I believe if we don't have Trimec, we have a variation. I mean, Trimec's a trade name.
Mm-hmm.
And Trimec is a three-way of three different broadleaf herbicides.
He's got it,
but we've also moved to a lot of Speed Zone, which is a three-way herbicide. Contains carfentrazone. It works faster. And they have two formulations, one for Bermuda and fescues, and then one for the more sensitive. The Speed Zone Southern is for the more sensitive southern lawns like Zoysia, St. Augustine, and Centipede.
And so, we've got another generic, Triad Select.
Yeah, Triad Select is, in essence, identical to the old classic Trimec.
Yep.
So take a look at those. Yes, we have those products in all of our stores. So, Scott, we're going to go and have a little conversation with Ted in Powdersville. Hello, Ted, and welcome to the Yard Pro Show.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a neighbor who wants to plant some roses in a bare area with a good old red soil, and he wants to amend the soil with the material used from where he ground the stump. Is that going to be too acidic?
It's kind of hard to say. I mean, I wouldn't be as concerned about the acidity as much as has that material deteriorated? Has it been mulched? Has it been composted to the point?
It's only been a couple of months.
I would be a tad bit afraid of it. I mean, that's raw plant tree material in essence. Yeah. I'm not certain I would go down that road. I'd almost pile that in the back, let him compost it, use it in the future, or haul it off site, and then I would get a good, if you want to incorporate, which incorporating organics in our heavy red clay in the upstate's a great option. Now, the key with this, Ted, is don't incorporate in the first 1 to 2 inches. We need to incorporate it as deeply as possible in that rose bed. So if you can till it 6, 8, 10 inches deep and incorporate it, you're better off. But I think I would go for an organic product that has been more decomposed versus raw new product. I just think that, putting in some...
Yeah, I have a tendency to agree to that.
So... And, that would be my concern. Yeah, that product's going to release some tannins. It's going to – you may find that it's actually doing more harm than good as it continues to deteriorate You know, if we compost it on top, it's going to deteriorate, or in a pile exposed to the elements, it's going to deteriorate much faster than if you seed it off in that red clay. So you may be left with some, you know, trunk chips a year from now when you go dig in that garden. So I probably wouldn't use it, just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's best not to go to economical at this time.
Yeah, that's correct. So, all right.
That's about all I had to say this morning.
All right. Thank you, Ted. We appreciate you calling in.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Scott, you can tell everybody is every text, every phone call is all about preparation, plannings, things of that nature, getting ready, right?
Mm-hmm.
We do have one text I would like to get to, and then I'd like to get back to maybe some planning to wrap up the show, but planning your garden, your landscape, things of that nature. But we had a great text come in, and I purposely kind of saved it where we had a little bit of time to talk about it. Good morning. What's the best way to get rid of voles? Voles with a V. Okay? We could make some jokes that no matter where you go in this country, you're not going to get away from Tennessee fans. I'm sorry, they're always there, right? But voles, let's understand the vole. The vole is not a mole, okay? A mole with an M are carnivorous. They like grubs. That's what they feed on. So they're pretty simple to control. You can believe what you read. You can believe all the gimmicks you see at 2 a.m. on television and infomercials about, I've got this supersonic mole stick you stick in your yard and it runs them away. An animal